This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Hockey News Podcast. I'm your host, Edward Fraser, today, filling in for Matt Larkin, who is, we'll say, on sabbatical.
It's on the shelf.
He's on the shelf.
Day to day
with daughter Pink Eye.
Wow.
Yeah.
Family. And second time in 2 weeks, Ed's making an appearance on the podcast.
Yeah, I never actually checked Twitter. I tried to get you banned permanently.
I did, and it didn't work.
I never really checked.
I would have thought there would be a lot of people who would...
I think I attacked it wrong. What I should have done was, instead of trying to get you banished, I tried to get people to keep me on. I tried to start the hashtag keep Ed. And nobody cares about me.
No, but I would have thought that the anybody but Campbell,
that
ABC, anybody but Campbell moment would have gained some steam.
Anyways, but now we're both here.
There you go.
And people are gonna miss Matt.
Yeah, if you don't like it, don't listen.
Well, I could try to replace Matt. I'm gonna usurp somebody.
Yes, you are.
All right.
Nobody cares about the man.
You are the Lou Gehrig to Matt Larkin's Wally Pipp.
Obviously. Wow. 90-year-old Ken Campbell dropping a baseball reference. I am Edward Fraser, as I mentioned. Ken Campbell is here, obviously. The guy nervously laughing off to the side is Ryan Kennedy. That's the laugh of hurry up and let's get on with this thing. So, let's hurry up and get on with this thing.
Right on.
The Boston Bruins announced this morning, being Tuesday morning, perhaps you're listening to this tomorrow, Charlie McAvoy out 4 weeks. Patrice Bergeron already on the shelf. Boston, for how amazing they've been over the past 2 months, three mm-hmm. months. Should Boston fans be worried?
Well, there's really no sense in being worried, right? I mean, there's nothing they can do about it because the trade deadline's passed. I don't think they should be too worried. First of all, they've gone 3-0 without Patrice Bergeron. So in the short term, at the very least, they've proven that they've got the ability to win games without their arguably their best player. I mean, I would assume it's between him and Marchand at this stage of the game.
Yeah, it's Bergeron.
Well, okay, if you say so.
Okay.
I like guys who score goals, but that's just me. Anyways, they've done it so far. 4 weeks would get McAvoy just before the playoffs. I mean, here's a guy who didn't even play for the Bruins last year until the playoffs started and came in and showed that he could. You know, he didn't look out of place. So I think missing 4 weeks at the end of the year for this guy, I don't think will be devastating in terms of his ability to come in and be a force in the playoffs. So as long as those two guys, you know, are ready, maybe maybe you could turn it around and say they're getting a little bit of rest. I mean, the Bruins are in the playoffs. I mean, they could lose virtually every game from here now to the end of the season and still make the playoffs in that division. So I don't think it's devastating. I think the Bruins have done a really good job of, having a lot of depth in their lineup. They got more at the trade deadline, with Rick Nash, with Tommy Wingles, signing Brian Gionta. I don't think it's something that's going to be a make or break here.
Yeah. My big concern would be that, they say they're going to reevaluate McAvoy in 4 weeks. So if he's not ready to go, then all of a sudden you are most likely playing Toronto in the first round, a team that when they're winning, they're doing it with a lot of speed. And mm-hmm. you need Bergeron at full strength, and I think you need McAvoy at full strength too, particularly because he's had such great chemistry with Zdeno Chara. Really, I think extended Big Z's career in a way.
Yeah.
In terms of effectiveness, like Zdeno Chara is still playing big minutes, and I think a part of that is because of McAvoy and his puck lugging abilities. If McAvoy's not 100%, then I think they get dinged a little bit. And with Bergeron, too, you want to make sure that he's 100% as well. And, we know hockey players, they want to get back as soon as possible. They want to be in those games and be difference makers. Hopefully Boston can convince these guys that it's for the greater good to make sure you are super, super ready. before you come back to the lineup, because you're right. I mean, they don't actually have anything to play for.
Right, exactly. Right, like, now. It's not like it's the good thing for the Bruins is, like, it's not like if there's 2 weeks left in the season and they're going, we need these guys in the lineup to get a playoff spot, or, you know, at I guess worst case scenario, you lose home ice advantage in the first round,
which is meaningless. Has been proven over the past 3-4 years that home ice advantage means basically nothing in the playoffs. Just get in and you can win.
Right.
So,
right.
And I think Bergeron, who lugs a lot of minutes and a lot of tough minutes, not bad to get some rest. And McAvoy, first full season.
Yep.
You know, a guy who little rest for him might be a good thing.
He's never played 82 games. That's exactly because he's coming out of college. So yeah.
And he still hasn't.
He probably played 82 games when he was 6. Because that's what they do. They play 80 games when they're 6.
As a
12-year-old,
he played 180 games.
Oh, I'm sure he did.
What do you guys... I mean, there's really three teams. I don't want to discount Florida because they've played very well of late. But coming out of the Atlantic, if you had to pick one of the three big teams, who do you like? Keeping Boston's injuries in mind.
I still like Tampa. I mean, Tampa's been... a favorite to win the Stanley Cup since the beginning of the year. They've done nothing to prove that they're not. I know they've had a few little spots of complacency here and there, and they've kind of I mean, when you're that far ahead, but you know, I mean, I look at that lineup. I think if I was picking the most underrated player in the NHL this year, it might be Braden Point.
He's unbelievable.
It might be Braden Point. The guy just gets, like, he's got like 50 some points. But he scores big goals all the time. You know, I mean, that lineup from top to bottom with the supplements that they gave themselves at the trade deadline, I just don't see anybody being able to beat them in the East at all.
Mm. If Boston's 100% healthy, I could see the Bruins giving Tampa Bay some trouble, particularly because of that big top line with Patrice Bergeron, where you know that not only can they lock down other teams' best players, but they can also score as well. Now I'm a little hesitant because of McAvoy and Bergeron's health, but that would be the team that I think could usurp Tampa Bay.
It's a weird triangle, and I agree, Tampa. Tampa's still my cup pick, but I feel Boston gives Tampa trouble, but Toronto gives Boston trouble.
Yeah.
Toronto will not give Tampa any trouble.
But they have beaten Tampa.
Of course they have, but it's a regular season. But the matchup there, I don't feel those teams match up well.
And boy, if you watched, and I know it's a small sample size, but if you watched Toronto play the last two games, the outdoor abomination in Washington and last night in Buffalo, I wouldn't be picking them to beat, you know, St. Joseph's Middle School.
But the 10-15 games leading up to these two games.
Absolutely.
I'm surprised that you're so adamant about Tampa as being the best team in the East, because Pittsburgh's been on fire.
Mm-hmm.
And they're looking like a really good bet to three-peat at this point. So why not Pittsburgh?
Well, I mean, right now they're, you know, obviously they're playing very well. You know, they don't have their starting goalie. Matt Murray's been out. They've been going with Tristan Jarry and Casey DeSmith for the most part. And what I like about Pittsburgh is they seem to be able to score their way out of these situations. I mean, Phil Kessel right now to me is, you know, I mean, if he's not the best setup man in the league, he's right there.
That's insane. Insane to say.
Yeah. I mean, of course Pittsburgh could beat Tampa Bay. Of course Pittsburgh could win the Stanley Cup 3 years in a row. But I mean, at some point, you know, those long playoff runs have to begin to take their toll. And you know, I mean, it's a hard way to play. The playoffs are hard. It's hard to play in the playoffs. It's hard on your defensemen. It's really difficult. There's a lot of heavy lifting to do. And to expect a team to be able to do it for 4 rounds 3 years in a row, I think might be expecting a bit too much in this day and age.
And here's something intriguing. If the playoffs start today, Pittsburgh gets Philadelphia in the first round. A Flyers team that in the second half has really come together under Dave Haxtell. They got Sean Couturier and Claude Giroux on different lines now.
Yep. Yep.
And Peter Mrazek started off hot, then he tailed off a bit. But if you look at a playoff series where you know the two franchises hate each other, you know it's going to be contentious. If Matt Murray's not in that net, all of a sudden you lose the edge in goaltending.
Well, even if he is, I'm not sure you have it. I'm not. You look at Matt Murray's body of work over the playoffs. He's had some rough patches.
Yeah.
I just think that series, a Pittsburgh-Philadelphia series, I think would go 7 games.
Yes.
And every game would be 10-9 in overtime.
Right. Yeah, they played that a couple of years ago, too.
Part three. Yeah.
So then you say, and it's crazy because you look at the Penguins and they added Derek Brassard, and on paper you say, well, they have two of the best centers on the planet. They just added either, depending on how you feel about Derek Brassard, either a second-line center or a 1B center is now their third-line center.
Right.
And it's like, man, that's pretty scary.
Yeah, he's better than the third-line center they had last year.
Yeah.
And the third-line center they had last year, Nick Bonino, was pretty damn good.
Exactly. Yeah. So they upgraded, still have Phil Kessel. At the same time, if they lose in the first round to the Flyers, I wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah, it wouldn't be shocking for them to win the Cup, wouldn't be shocking for them
to
lose.
Yeah, only two things can happen.
Yeah.
They lose in the first round, or they win the Stanley Cup.
I don't want to spend too much time on Philadelphia. We know how great they've been, but I was fascinated by your Dave Hakstol, what you were told about Dave Hakstol teams, and I think the listeners would be really interested in that as well.
Yeah, and shout out to Brad Schlossman, who is a fantastic beat writer for the University of North Dakota, writes for the Grand Forks Herald. He pointed out that when Dave Hakstol was coaching North Dakota, they often struggled early on and then took off in the second half. And I think it's just a matter of everybody getting on the same page and gelling, and once they all figure it out, and I know Hakstol's not, this isn't his first year in Philly, but we've seen it with the Flyers where they're a very streaky team. And
very streaky.
For whatever reason... Yeah. They just really come together, or these Hakstol teams really come together in the second half. And this is something that Brad has pointed out a couple of times on Twitter and in articles in the past couple of years. And lo and behold, it's happening again, where the Flyers are just kicking it on all cylinders right now. And it seems to be a pattern with that.
Man, they were
boss.
Dead.
Dead.
They were dead.
Dead. Yeah, they did. Were. I absolutely did. They were absolute. I had written them off. I mean, there's. That's what I mean about them being so insanely streaky. And that's what scares me about this team too, both in a good way and a bad way.
Mm.
Is they could run the table in the playoffs, or they could get swept if things. Because as soon as the playoffs come, the button gets reset. I don't care how hot you are going in the playoffs. It's a completely different.
Well, you talked about home ice advantage and it not being a factor. I'm pretty sure that historically how hot a team is going into the playoffs is an equally non-impact factor as well.
Yeah.
Non-impact factor.
It's that goodest
That's
command
good corporate speak.
Of the English language
yes.
that has us all.
We are professionals.
Seattle. Big ticket drive. They've got the numbers. It looks flashy. Seems like it's a home run. They're going to be there. Am I wrong?
No. Next question. Sold all kinds of ticket packages. Getting a building. NHL invited them to apply for an expansion team.
Yeah.
This has slam dunk written all over it.
So I have two questions then. Is first, let's deal with Quebec first then, because I think that's what most people are wondering, is why not Quebec? I mean, why Seattle instead of, which is a bit of a risk compared to Quebec, which I think you know what you're getting. Maybe it might not be the home run that Seattle does, but why not them instead of Seattle?
Well, I don't think it's an either or, okay? Like, I don't think the fact that Seattle is clearly going to get an expansion team has anything to do with Quebec not getting one.
Mm.
I think they're two different markets. It's two different situations. And I think, you know, with the knowledge of what Vegas has done this year as an expansion team, I think the NHL has a far greater comfort level going into Seattle. I mean, the NHL has wanted Seattle as badly as Seattle's wanted the NHL over the years, okay? The only thing that was keeping Seattle from getting an NHL team was the fact that they didn't have a suitable building, and they have that now. And so that makes it a perfect fit. It's a great fit. It's a great fit geographically. It evens out the conferences. It gives Vancouver a natural rival. It's perfect in so many ways. Quebec, on the other hand, I think I don't necessarily agree with you that Quebec would be a roaring success. I mean,
no,
just because you put a team in Canada. I mean, look at the Ottawa Senators right now.
Sure.
You know, look at the Ottawa Senators right now. And speaking of the Senators, I think that's where Quebec comes in.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
I think Quebec is what Winnipeg was. And to a lesser extent, what Hamilton was at one point. It's a landing spot. It's a landing spot for a team that needs to get out of Dodge real quick, the way the Atlanta Thrashers did.
Right.
The NHL, given, you know, all things considered, the NHL would not have wanted to go to Winnipeg. But they needed a place to go. The Atlanta Thrashers needed a place to go, and they needed a place to go right away.
Yeah.
So Winnipeg was ready. They got it. That's what's going to happen with Quebec if and when they get a team. And I say if because Hamilton was that stalking horse for so many years.
Yep.
And for so many years, teams threatened to go there and nobody ever went there. And then the building just got obsolete. And the market isn't probably suitable for the NHL. So many things. Well, maybe it is. I mean, Southern Ontario probably is, but the building isn't. I think the same thing could happen in Quebec, but I think that's what you're looking at. You're looking at a situation where if an Ottawa Senators, if this whole thing falls through in Ottawa, you know, if in 6 or 7 years Carolina is still struggling, you know, if Florida is still struggling down the road, then I think you look at that as a landing spot.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate because I've been to the new building in Quebec City. It's fantastic. And, I mean, it's an NHL arena. It's really well put together. And, I mean, the fan base, it's funny. You know, I've been to Quebec City a couple of times in the past few years. And I guess I just kind of assumed that they would end up cheering for the Habs. But it's not true. They hate the Canadians in Quebec City. They still rock Nordiques merch, you know, that's what they sell in the stores, and they don't want to cheer for Montreal, they want to cheer for Quebec, and I think the fan base is there, but it's tough because, you know, Seattle's going to be 32, you're not going to go to 33, that doesn't make any sense.
Yes.
By any metric, it unbalances things again.
Yeah,
it's just
yeah.
too many
it's
teams.
It's basically by adding Seattle is what, you know, they're trying to achieve balance now.
Exactly.
So
like
why
32,
would you throw
that out? That's
yeah.
perfect.
Yeah.
And yeah, stalking horse is like the perfect term for that. And you know, you feel for it because it's a good hockey market. It's I think the thing is I'll make like a draft analogy here. It's like Quebec is like a safe pick. There's not a ton of upside you know, there's only so many corporate.
Yeah, they're the third line center
there.
That
they're
you pick
third
at the
line
end of the
center,
first round. Yeah.
Whereas Seattle is more of the, like, they're the Rasmus Dahlin, where it's like, oh, we see a lot of potential there. Like, if this works out, it could be a game changer. So I think that's sort of the difference if we're going to explain things in that way.
My worry slightly about Seattle, though, is that fan expectations are going to be a little bit out of skew. And I know you're going to get a grace period because it's new no matter what. And you're going to get that in Las Vegas.
How would you want to be the first GM of the Seattle team?
Well, yeah, that's really exactly what I'm talking about, is because there's no way that they're going to be able to replicate the success of Vegas.
However,
Vegas couldn't replicate the success of Vegas, and they won't replicate the success of Vegas next season.
But keep in mind, like, if it's the 2021 season that Seattle joins, which sounds like that's what it's going to be, they'll have 3 years of Golden Knights hockey for the fan base to look at. So maybe the Golden Knights win the Stanley Cup this year. You know, who knows? Yeah, but maybe next year they miss the playoffs. You know, maybe they're a bottom feeder for the next 2 years, and then at least Seattle fans can say, like, okay, well, they caught lightning in a bottle, and then things sort of went back to normal. Or, I mean, maybe Vegas stays at the top and it becomes a nightmare job for Seattle's GM, where he has to explain to fans why they're not the best team in their division right off the hop.
Three of the players getting a lot of chatter about the Hart Trophy. Nate MacKinnon, Taylor Hall, and of course Connor McDavid. Not looking good for any of those teams to make the playoffs.
Not looking good?
New Jersey.
Sorry.
New Jersey's on the bubble.
And Colorado's still fighting.
Colorado's fighting on the bubble as well.
Yeah.
Okay. But no sure thing.
Looking good. I mean, it's not looking good.
It's not a shoe win.
If you're on the bubble, it's not looking good.
Okay.
Right.
Welcome to the Hockey News Podcast, where we talk semantics for a half. My question being, can a guy who misses the playoffs win the Hart Trophy? Should he?
Yes, he can. It's been done before.
Yeah.
Yes, he should. In the case of McDavid, yes, he will, I think, in the case of Connor McDavid. Connor McDavid has been every... How can you not give it to Connor McDavid? He won the... He was the league's MVP last year, and he is every bit as good this year as he was last year. Maybe even better. He's on pace for 99 points. He had 100 last year. He has scored a higher percentage of the Oilers. He's been on a higher percentage of the Oilers' goals this year. I think like 44% as opposed to like 40 last year. It's not, none of this is his doing. Not a single part of the train wreck, tire fire, piece of garbage that the Edmonton Oilers have been this year is due to Connor McDavid. There's absolutely no reason for voters not to seriously consider Connor McDavid for the Hart Trophy. And the reason why I say it is because he won it last year. He's been as good or better this year than he was when he won it last year. The only difference is the people around him aren't, and that should not be, that's not on him. I'm sorry. His legacy is too important, and it's too important to get this right. That's not on him.
I will respectfully disagree. And just for context, the last time a player won the Hart Trophy without making the playoffs, Mario Lemieux, 1987-88, he had 168 points. Pittsburgh still finished sixth in the Patrick Division. Before that, it was Andy Bathgate with the Rangers in 58-59. So it doesn't happen very often. Yeah. I don't think McDavid should even be considered, and this is why. If your team doesn't make the playoffs, your season had no value. Therefore, you can't be the most valuable player because it was all for naught. I understand what you're saying about the amount of points he has put up and the percentage of points he has put up for the Oilers, but it's in a vacuum because it didn't get them anywhere.
This gets to the crux of the whole MVP trophy debate, doesn't
it? Yeah,
it totally does. It's about...
It does, kind of. But
it's not the best player award. It's the most valuable player award.
It's outstanding versus valuable.
Yeah, and there's a subtle but distinct distinction there. And to me, like, if we get down to the most valuable player, like a guy like Mike Smith should be in the conversation because the Flames may win 5 games this year if Mike Smith isn't on the plane.
But it's been going to the best player for quite a while,
and that's the thing.
And Connor McDavid, and a lot of people can make the argument that Connor McDavid's the best player in the NHL.
But why not Nikita Kucherov?
Well, see, and this is where it goes, because this is most valuable, because the Lightning without Kucherov are still the best team in the Atlantic, amazingly enough, because they're so deep and so good. Yeah. So really, how valuable is he to that team? There's always this mind... where you're trying to figure out, okay, are we like, what's the balance between really good and importance to team?
Yeah.
So now I just think it's an individual award, and individual awards are there to recognize players, individuals who have done something special during the season. And you know, this year has been a complete disaster for the Edmonton Oilers. I think that there's got to be some recognition that Connor McDavid, his hands are clean on this. Like, he can go to bed at night and sleep like a baby knowing that he has done everything in his power to make the Edmonton Oilers better, and the players around him and the people around him have failed spectacularly. So I think it would be really unfair to penalize a player who's been so good because those around him have been so bad.
I will also say this, when it comes to Taylor Hall in New Jersey and Nathan MacKinnon in Colorado, if one or both of those teams makes the playoffs, that definitely affects my vote because those players have been so good, and those teams were not supposed to be good at all, and they have been the drivers on those squads. And I mean, they didn't do it by themselves. They've been other good players, Mikko Rantanen, Nico Hischier, you know.
Alex Kerfoot.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's some great surprising performances that have happened this year. But if one of those players gets his team into the playoffs, that for me is like added value on top of what they've already accomplished as individuals.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. That's a game changer. If the New Jersey Devils make the playoffs, it's in large part because of Taylor Hall. And to your point, which is a good one, that, you know, I mean, on top of it, they weren't supposed to make the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Edmonton Oilers this year were supposed to be a Stanley Cup contender.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But again.
So, just quickly to end this, you've seen a lot of these votes come down over the years. Will Connor McDavid win the Hart?
I doubt it.
Yeah.
I doubt it.
That's how I feel as well. It's just too closely aligned with team success.
Yeah.
It would happen more often if people didn't care about the team success.
If the season were to end today, he'd be number one on my ballot. Mm.
I don't doubt it. And that there's nothing. There's no argument against that.
That's the thing.
I mean, other than the semantics of the award description itself, but he's the best player out there. He's the best player in the league right now.
For what it's worth, and I know this is like hockey culture, but if you asked Connor McDavid if he should win the Hart Trophy this year, what do you think he would say?
He'd say
no. He would have said no last year.
He would say no if he had 250 points and everybody else had 80.
Yeah.
Have you seen, just to digress a little bit, the one thing about Connor McDavid I've noticed is his body language sucks. They'll win an overtime game or a shootout or whatever, and he'll just, like, undo his chin strap, skate over. Yeah, way to go, guys.
Yeah.
Like, he is pissed.
Because he knows that it's playoffs or nothing.
Right.
Yeah. The guy lives and breathes winning.
And that,
you know, I think that comes with maturity, that body language thing. I mean, we forget that this guy isn't even 20 years old yet.
And when I say body language, I don't mean body language in terms of, like, when he's out there playing.
No.
He's great. Right. Yeah. It's just like, hey, Connor, your parents just won $100 million in the lottery.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, technically, they already did.
Yeah, they all did.
But even in the room, like, he hasn't been able to hide.
Touché.
He hasn't been able to hide his disgust with this team at some point during media scrums this year.
Yeah,
it's been kind of funny to watch him trying to hide that.
Burning. His tongue must have so many tooth marks in it.
From one disappointing team to three others, not that any of these teams are necessarily completely out of it. There's still 20% of the season to go. But the Flames, the Isles, and the Jackets all, again, don't look good to make the playoffs. Which of those three clubs...
No, they really don't look good. Well, Calgary doesn't look horrible, but they don't look good. They really needed that extra point last night that they didn't get.
Yes.
That was a good hockey game, actually.
It was.
Okay, so which of these three clubs should be most disappointed if they miss the playoffs?
Who is it? Calgary, the Islanders,
and Columbus. Or pick somebody else, if you feel like.
I guess the Islanders... I guess because it impacts their best player probably in a big, big way.
Oh, that's interesting.
You know what I mean? Like if they don't make the playoffs, then I don't know that that's going to be the thing that puts John Tavares over the top in his decision. But he said all along that everything is going to be a factor, right? Making the playoffs is going to be a factor. The building's going to be a factor. The blah, blah, blah is going to be a factor. This is going to be a factor. The future's going to be a factor. So I think that the Islanders have the most to lose by not making the playoffs because it would give John Tavares another reason to say, you know what? It's been a slice. See you later.
Yeah. I was going to say Columbus because they have such a nice balanced lineup, but when you look at the Flames on paper, like that top four D core that they put together, and you look at the Monahan-Gaudreau line, and Matthew Tkachuk, and Backlund, like you look at that team, and then, you know, when Mike Smith was healthy, I mean, he was very good for them, but it's like, how are they not getting home ice advantage, let alone that they might miss the playoffs. Like,
yeah.
What is wrong with this team? Like, how did it go south so fast? I think that's the big disappointment for me is, like, when I look at that lineup, I see a team that looks pretty deadly, and they have a lot of nice elements, and for whatever reason, they just didn't put it together. And, I mean, even if Mike Smith didn't get hurt, I think they probably would have been in trouble because they were just, no pun intended, they were playing with fire pretty much all season, and it's incredible to see how little they've accomplished.
This team was my Stanley Cup pick going into the season, so, you know, a few months ago. But this wasn't a dark horse pick for me. They were one of the legitimate 8 to 10 teams who had a chance, and I love the makeup of their team. The only question mark was Mike Smith.
Yeah.
And he came through with flying colors.
He was their best player.
He's been the best player.
Yep.
So you're exactly right. It is baffling. And the reason is because so many players in this lineup are being mismanaged and misutilized. So if I'm a Flames fan, I am pulling my hair out if I'm a Flames fan, because this is a team, you have a very small window to win, and they've ruined a season here. So by far, this is the most disappointing team in the NHL this season. By far. Edmonton. Okay, they're the second most disappointing team in their province.
They're not even the most disappointing team in their province. What are you talking about?
Well, for me, from my outlook,
in terms of teams that are north of Red Deer and play in the NHL.
All right, let's get some reader questions in here to wrap stuff up. We're going to start with one from our old friend Mo Cranker, who was an intern here a few years back.
I believe he works at the Medicine Hat News now. Think he does. I think he works at the Medicine Hat
News. We have interns all over the world.
Yes.
Because when you come here, you get taught up right.
That's right.
Mo, you
get taught up right.
Mo is asking because
one of them's going to pick up my dry cleaning right now. It's great.
No,
of course not. Do you think I would do that?
That's what I was said. That no way.
No way. You have dry cleaning.
No. Can dress clean, Burke. Mo says you've got to talk at length. I don't think we can promise that about the Panthers and why Barkov should win the Selke. So let's start talking about the Panthers first. Again, I don't see this as a legitimate team. Are they not just clearly the fourth best team in the Atlantic? Like, are they not very...
Oh, yeah, but that might be good enough to be the eighth best team in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah.
And it might be good enough to make the playoffs.
But, yeah. I mean, they don't have any true cup aspirations. I mean, this is a team that's first-round fodder at best.
No, but they have cup aspirations long term, and yes. I think making the playoffs and getting a lunch handed to them, and chances are it'll be Tampa. So that'll be a nice little state rivalry there.
Yeah.
But you know, I mean, there would be a lot worse things in the world than them squeaking into the playoffs and getting their asses handed them by one of the best teams in the league. That's part of the growing process, and I think that's what will make them a contender down the road. I think the big thing with Tampa or with Florida was, you know, I think we all knew this was going to take a little while. They rejigged everything. They changed their whole philosophy. They got their front office back in order. They got a new coach. I think it took a while for Bob Bugner to kind of make his impact on that team. But I think the biggest thing that he's done is he's got some scoring. He's spread out the scoring on the top two lines with Huberto, Barkov, Trocheck, Dadonov, you know, those guys.
Yeah.
And he's managed to find the right combination of guys on the top two lines so that they can get enough scoring from their top two lines. Their fourth line gives them nothing, but it's a good shutdown line, and their third line's okay. I think Ekblad has really come around. He's really started to play a lot better. Keith Yandel's producing. Mike Matheson's, really starting to have a good year. So I really like what the Panthers have done this year. Again, another team like Philadelphia that was dead. They were dead.
Oh, yeah.
And, and I think, a big part of it, too, is, and the one of the reasons why I don't see this as being hugely sustainable is Roberto Luongo's been lights out since he's come back from his injury.
Yep.
So can you really count on a 38-year-old goaltender who's
well-rested,
yeah. To carry you through the playoffs? Probably not. But I think it would be massive for the Florida Panthers and their fan base and their front office and their young players to be able to pull this off this year. I think that would be a massive feat for them.
Well, that's the point, and you just gloss over it, but I think more importantly, very importantly, is reigniting some passion within the fan base.
Right.
That is huge in a market that has seen very little success over the past 15 years.
Well, and all their teams suck at every sport right now. So it'd be good to have a little bit of...
And if you look at Barkov, I think what we're seeing is, you know, in the past, I'll say 2 years, he's really had a chance to show the player that the Panthers thought he would be when they took him second overall, ahead of Jonathan Drouin, ahead of Seth Jones. You know, he had some injuries earlier in his career, and he was a big center. He was still getting used to North America, so it was going to take a little bit of time. But now we're seeing, like, Maximum Barkov, which is a fantastic B-movie, by the way. He's what you need to win a Stanley Cup. He's that big, dominating center. As for Selke, I kind of feel like it's going to be Patrice Bergeron. I know, you think it's like a legacy award, but Patrice Bergeron's just been incredible. Yeah. And despite what you say, he has been scoring goals. He passes to Marchand a lot because Marchand is a sniper, but Bergeron's past 20 already.
I only mean it's a legacy award in the fact that you've got to beat the champ before you
beat the champ.
So it's not like Barkov is so far ahead of Bergeron. Bergeron is still there. And as long as you're still in the conversation, you're going
to
win.
It's a definite meritocracy that you have to work your way up.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Yes. Like, and so Barkov's planting the seeds this year.
Yeah.
He's planting the seeds. Yeah. So now, maybe within the next year or two, he becomes a serious contender, and then maybe he starts winning it. Because, you know, like you say, I mean, even in years when guys, you know, I mean, Andre Kopitar got some support for the Selke Trophy last year, and he was horrible. So I think you're right. I think it is in a lot of ways a legacy award, because it's one of those ones that's, unless you watch the game real closely, it's hard to put a definition on it.
A question from Ted, and it's a bit of a long one, but I think it's a really good one, so I want to get your guys' take on it. I'd like to hear your guys' take on NHL coaches' preference for glue guys who bring a veteran presence to their teams over younger and more skilled players. I've heard the argument that they more easily earn coaches' trust because they're consistent in their mistakes, whereas younger players are more often a wild card when it comes to their mistakes. Across the league, even the veteran glue guys are actively hurting their teams on a nightly basis, but they're still given more preferential ice time over kids who can provide more on-ice value. Ryan, let's start with you.
Yeah, it's almost like it's the evil you know versus the evil you don't know. Yeah, and I think there's a lot of merit to the question. And I addressed that in a column that's going to be coming in the magazine where...
Future Watch on newsstands later this week.
Future Watch dropping. Pew, pew, pew. If you look at some of the teams that have surprised us in the past couple of years, like last year's Toronto Maple Leafs, this year's New Jersey Devils, and this year's Colorado Avalanche for that matter, there was a lot of young players given outsized roles, and they performed. And it's a young man's game. It's a speed game, and yes, you're going to get some growing pains there with a lot of those players, but it's a risk-reward thing. And the reward, I feel, is much better than if you play safe. And I think we're seeing that. And, you know, in Toronto, fans complain about Roman Polak, but Mike Babcock clearly likes Roman Polak. He's a veteran. He's
good
a big
man,
guy.
Good man does things the right way.
Does
Travel
things the right
everybody.
Way.
Good man does things the right way.
In Calgary, you look at Troy Brouwer. A lot of Flames fans are losing it over how Troy Brouwer is used, but Troy Brouwer is a Stanley Cup winner. He's good in the room. He's a big body. You know, he does things the right way. And then, Ken, you were also talking about Boston signing Brian Gionta.
Well, yeah, I mean, I would say to Ted, that guy 11920, that's his Twitter handle.
Yep.
I would say to him, there's a reason why Boston goes out and signs Brian Gionta. There's a reason why Nashville pulls Mike Fisher out of retirement. Mm. There's a reason why teams are kicking the tires on a guy like Jerome Iginla. Mm. You know, I mean, the coaches like that comfort. They like that reliability. They like knowing that when it comes down to it, they can look down the bench and know that they've seen, they've got a guy that they trust, that they've seen do it before, even if he can't do it anymore, clearly, because a lot of these guys end up getting, you know, 1-year deals and contracts and you know, look at Thomas Vanek. Like, every year at the trade deadline, people want Thomas Vanek, even though Thomas Vanek has proved a lot of times that maybe you don't want Thomas Vanek. You know? I think the point is very well taken by Ted. I think he's a very astute observer of the game.
But will we not see that change, though? Because younger guys are coming into the league more and more prepared, and I think that they're able to earn a coach's trust more easily now than they were in past, where they needed a little more seasoning before they were able to. I mean, I think this applies more to forwards. Defensemen, it takes, there's a bigger learning curve. Goaltenders as well, of course. But is that going to change in the coming seasons?
I think it's already changing, and what you're seeing is, in a lot of scenarios, veterans will be brought in on professional tryout
PTOs,
contracts. PTOs have been very big lately, and the logic has been, you know, talking to some GMs, they'll say, okay, we're going to bring a couple of guys in on PTOs. If the young guys can beat them, then the young guy gets the job. And I think that's great for competition, because we've seen scenarios where the young guy has, in fact, gotten the job. And with the PTOs, you're also getting some veteran gems if they can do it. Scotty Upshaw is a perfect example of this in the recent years, where he's had a couple of PTOs and cashed in on contracts because he's been able to show that he can be that consistent veteran that can settle things down for your team, and he can still provide value. But I think it's becoming less dogmatic, where the whole tie goes to the veteran thing. I think what we're seeing now is teams actually saying to kids, okay, if you can earn the spot, we will in fact give it to you.
Well, we'll leave it there for this week. Look for Future Watch on newsstands coming later. Should be out by hopefully Friday. If not, you can order it online now and get it sooner than later. For Ken Campbell, Ryan Kennedy, I've been your host, Edward Fraser. We'll see you next week.